Wouldn't you like to take a vacation from your bills? Well, you can. With credit card balances at an all-time high and Golden Oak's 5.25% rate, you could be saving thousands of dollars after a simple phone call. Call today and get your cash in as little as 14 days and make no payments for 2 months. Visit GoldenOakLending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending cured my blues.
6.19 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
This is John Lyons on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI. We're about 20 minutes away from talking to Cooper Boardman about all things Red Sox. I'm your host, John Lyons. Got producer David Azer as well. We're going to be here until just about 6:15, getting you ready for North Carolina versus Duke. By the way, David, did you see that Bill Belichick had pizzas delivered to all the UNC fraternities this evening?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, but Domino's pepperoni pizzas to all the fraternities. I've seen some pictures already on Twitter, or aka X now. You can follow me there, by the way, at The Real John Lyons, JONLYONS. But yeah, Bill Belichick trying to ingratiate himself to the fraternities, sending the pizza. Of course, he doesn't need to do that with the sororities. He's already got Jordan Hudson. I'm just kidding. Sorry, Bill. But yes, delivering pizzas. I never thought I would see the day that Bill Belichick is delivering pizzas to, he's not actually going himself. He's just having them deliver. But Bill Belichick delivering pizzas to college fraternities. I got to be honest with you. All those times up at the podium where he would just snort back at people who asked questions, I didn't think I would ever see him do that. But hey, credit to him. Who doesn't like pizza? I actually think, too, it's a side take, David. Domino's pizza is really underrated. I actually like it. A lot of people hate on it. I like it. It's good.
Yeah, it's one of the better like chain pizza brands.
I think it's the best.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, like, Little Caesars is really good. Like, Pizza Hut's good. You know, like, they're good. But I think Domino's for chains, the best. I don't know, just me. We can get back to actually talking about real sports things in New England. We're talking Patriots here, and I do want to get into kind of where they're at in their offseason. Obviously, Senior Bowl is today. Before we do any of that, let's get to Mike in Maine. Wants to talk some Patriots here on the phone lines. Mike, welcome into the program. What do you got for us?
I definitely agree with the Domino's pizza thing. I would say that their chicken is even better.
Oh, their Mike, their chicken wings are awesome. I love those.
Yeah. Let me just say that you mentioned a little bit Randy Moss and a glancing blow. Let's not forget what it took to actually get Randy Moss. And the Sports Illustrated article that gave Randy Moss to us for what, like a fourth or fifth round draft pick, something like that.
It was a fourth round pick, and he took a pay cut.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure, Mike. Yep. And thanks for the call. I mean, that's another side note of like the Belichick-Reed thing. There were multiple times where Belichick coached teams changed the way teams around the league played offense and defense. Like, you look at what happened in 07, where all of a sudden they went full shotgun spread on almost every play, and they had Moss and Welker and Stallworth, and they were throwing the ball all over the place. Teams weren't doing that before them. And I'm not saying, like, the Peyton Manning Colts did a lot of shotgun stuff, I know, and other teams did it. But to the level the Patriots did in 07, especially with that vertical threat in the passing game with Moss, teams weren't doing that. And then lo and behold, in subsequent years, they started doing it. And then they draft two tight ends in Gronkowski and Hernandez, and they start using 12 personnel all the time. And teams have done that before, sure, but the tight end all of a sudden was a much bigger part of the passing game than it had been before. And look, there have been great tight ends before, Kellen Winslow, Tony Gonzalez, I know, but it felt like after 2010, when the Patriots brought those guys in, and even after Hernandez was gone, and they had just Gronkowski and then Gronkowski and Bennett in 16, like, that became a major focus point for a lot of teams, whereas before, not so much. So I think that's another little piece there. And look, Reed has done an amazing job offensively, too. And you even look at Belichick's game plan in Super Bowl 53 against the Rams. Nobody could stop the Sean McVay Rams. All of a sudden, teams around the league started copying that. The next year, the Rams struggled. They had to adjust their scheme a little bit. Now they're, of course, back to being a great offense once again, and they get Stafford. They won a Super Bowl. But there was a time period where teams were copying Bill, and I think he deserves credit for that. All right. So, Patriots offseason. We got the Senior Bowl going on now. I think when you look at where they're at, right, like, I feel on February 1st, 2025, I feel a hell of a lot better about the Patriots than I did on February 1st, 2024. And a big part of that is the Drake May factor, but it's also just what they've done in the last few weeks. Like, whether it's Vrabel, I'm a huge McDaniels guy. I think he's going to be great. I think you look at the work he did with Matt Castle. You look at the work he did with Mac Jones. I think that matters a lot. I think it's more relevant than the stuff he did with Brady, at least as far as, like, comparing it to what he'll do at Drake May. I'm really interested in Terrell Williams as DC. I mean, I think it's going to be maybe a different style, at least to an extent, of defense than we're used to here in New England. But it seems like they're still going to try to be game plan specific, and I would expect that under Mike Vrabel. So I'm really excited for that. I feel like their coaching staff, and I still want to see who's going to end up being the wide receivers coach. I don't think that's been announced yet. And, like, I just think their coaching staff is in a better place than a year ago. And they lost Mike Pellegrino. They lost Brian Belichick. Those, I think, are legit significant losses. But I think in the aggregate, you're better at head coach, you're better at offensive coordinator, you're better at defensive coordinator. Special teams coordinator, you're the same, but I will say the Patriots special teams were better last year than they had been the previous few years. So if that trend continues, you'll be pretty solid on special teams. So I feel better about it. So that brings me to what they have kind of coming up. And Chad Graff had an article in The Athletic earlier this week about his plan for the Patriots offseason, and it involved signing T. Higgins, drafting, I think he had him drafting Will Campbell in that as well. Sorry, Chad, if I'm wrong on that. But I look at this offseason, I think so the most important thing is going to be the draft. And I think what they should be planning to do, and I say this now because they're down at the Senior Bowl, they're probably talking to other GMs, other coaches, other scouts. They should make it known that they will trade down from fourth overall. And you trade down and stay in the top 10. Don't get me wrong, I don't want them to trade down from 4 to 20. But trade down, stay in the top 10, acquire some more assets, and then let's say you trade down, because I did a mock draft earlier this week, and I'm, you know, just trying to see what value the Patriots could get. If you can trade down to that 8-9 range, I did a trade with Carolina to 8, you can still get Will Campbell at 8 or Calvin Banks. Like, one of those guys, if not both, will be there. And I know there's concerns about Will Campbell's arm length. I get it. I think we heard some of those whispers about Matt Light. I know the NFL is a little different now, but, like, a tackle with shorter arms can still play well if his technique is really good. So I guess we're going to be obsessed over arm measurements at the combine or his pro day coming up. That'll be a big talking point. But even if it's Banks, right? Like, you can trade down, stay in the top 10, and still get a left tackle of the future. Because for my money, I think you need at least two new guys on the offensive line. Because I look at the way their offensive line is set up. You have Drake May, you have the quarterback, which is great. But I look at the way their offensive line is set up, and I think, okay, David Andrews, good player, but he might only play one more year. Cole Strange, I think he can be a solid guard or center, depending on where Andrews is at. I think Onwenu can be a great guard. Okay, pretty good tackle. He was, especially early in his career, he was a great tackle. But he can be a good tackle. I think he can be a great guard. So then that brings you to, even if your interior is Strange at left guard, Andrews at center, and then Onwenu at right guard, that's a pretty good interior offensive line. I do think City So could be maybe a bigger contributor in McDaniel's offense. I thought it was weird he was a non-factor last year. But that still brings you to tackle where, I mean, do you believe in Caden Wallace at right tackle? I'm not so sure. Like, and left tackle, you have nobody. So I think you got to draft a left tackle in the top 10. And then what I would do is in free agency, either sign another tackle. So let's say you do sign like Ronnie Stanley, a left tackle, then you can kind of adjust from there. But I would draft a left tackle in the first round and then sign either someone that could play right tackle or look at Trey Smith, right? One of the, or a good interior offensive lineman. Trey Smith would be my first choice from the Chiefs. Sign one of those guys and then either kick Onwenu out to right tackle. And then you're kind of in business if you do that. Like, because again, the combo inside of Strange, Andrews, Onwenu, I like, just doesn't answer your questions at tackle. And maybe they believe in Caden Wallace. And maybe they'll sign Ronnie Stanley and they'll say he can play left tackle, Caden Wallace can play right tackle. And we are going to draft Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter in the top 10. Okay, I can accept that. I just think the number one question the Patriots need to answer is what are they doing at offensive tackle? And I know everyone wants to talk about Travis Hunter and T. Higgins and the receivers, and I get it. It's fun to talk about those guys, and they make fun plays, and they do help you win. But if you walk away from the draft and you don't have a long-term answer at both tackle spots, that's a huge freaking problem. I mean, when was the last time? Think about it. When was the last time the Patriots got high-level play from their left tackle? Trent Brown in 2018? And I'm not telling you that left tackles have all sucked since then, but that's the last time it was really high-level. It's a long time ago. So, again, and I feel like, too, everybody says the offensive line is a problem and they want to help the offensive line until it's actually time to help the offensive line. And then everyone wants the Travis Hunter, the Abdul Carter, the Tet McMillan. And I get it. Like, again, those guys are exciting and I think they'll be good pros. But I think you're in a much better spot if you trade down in that first round and you get Banks or Campbell. And then that's where, to me, my next step, so trade down and get Banks or Campbell in the top 10. Use that second-round pick you have, so 38 overall. And depending on who you trade down with, maybe you'll have another second. But use that second-round pick and trade that for a veteran receiver, whether it's DK Metcalf, whether it's – and I know he's kind of said some comments earlier this week, like, doesn't love Foxborough. Okay. I think if you trade for DK Metcalf, he comes here and he's good, he'll stay. But or it could be Deebo Samuel, right? There's going to be guys available. I know A.J. Brown, I would love it. I think that's more of a pipe dream, especially if the Eagles win. I don't think he's going anywhere there. I know there was some things earlier this year where him and Jalen Hurts went back. You know, there was kind of some like backbiting, you know, type stuff, subtweeting type stuff. I don't see A.J. Brown leaving Philadelphia. I would love it, but I don't know if that's super realistic. So I think it'd be Metcalf or Samuel. Maybe there's another guy I'm not thinking of. And, of course, you can sign T. Higgins as well. But I think you want to go into next year with, yes, an answer at left tackle. You want at least one, if not two, new starters at receiver. Because, I mean, I like Kendrick Bourne a lot. I like DeMario Douglas a lot. Beyond those two guys, there's no one in their receiver room I trust right now. And I think Jalen Polk will be better under Josh McDaniels, I do. But he's got to show that. I don't trust that right now. And Javon Baker, I don't know if it's ever going to come together for him. And I know it's only been 1 year, but we'll see. And beyond that, I mean, there's just not a lot to trust in the wide receiver room. It's really Bourne and Douglas. And I guess you can put Polk in there to give him a chance, but that's still three guys. I want two new starters coming in at receiver. I want two new starters at offensive tackle, or at least two new starters on your offensive line, one at left tackle. And the thing, if you do those things, I'm not sitting here saying you're going to win 11 games next year, but if you do those things, all of a sudden, you're knocking on the door to fight for a playoff spot because you have the quarterback. I think you have the coaches. I think your defense is going to be better. I know Mike Giardi said earlier this week here on EEI that there might be some core pieces, and Mego and Shime talked about this earlier today, there might be some core pieces or at least guys that we look at as core pieces right now that come trade season coming up are not core pieces anymore and get moved. I think that guy like Kyle Duggar, guy like Ramondre Stevenson, I look at them potentially like that. But I still think your defense is going to be good. I think your running back room will be solid. You might want to add something to that. It's what's killing you right now, and it's killed you for years, is your receivers are among the worst in the league, and you have the worst offensive line in the league. So I know it's not sexy to talk about the offensive line and improving it, but if you want the Patriots to be, you know, get back to the playoffs and be a good team once again, that's going to be their number one priority. Not Travis Hunter, not Tet McMillan, and even though I love him, not Abdul Carter either. It's got to be your offensive line, and I would trade down. And then I would use that second-round pick, go after a legit premier receiver, somebody of that kind of mold. So that's kind of my early offseason plan for the Patriots. We're still workshopping it a little bit. We got more football to get to later on in the program, but coming up next, we're going to talk to Cooper Boardman. He does pregame and postgame for the Red Sox. Believe it or not, Truck Day is this week. Spring training opens in like a week and a half. So the Red Sox season's right around the corner. So we're going to talk to Cooper, get his thoughts on all things Red Sox. Before we do that, though, it's time to trend with David Azar.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up on what's trending here on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Bruins are in action at home against the New York Rangers. The score is currently 3-1 with the Bruins on top. Charlie Coyle, David Pastrnak, and Charlie McAvoy have the three goals for the Bees. The Celtics defeated the Pelicans 118-116 last night thanks to a last-second shot by Jason Tatum. Tatum and Brown combined for 55 points in the win. The Boston College hockey team is getting set for their matchup with the UMass Minutemen. You can hear the call of the game on WEEI AM 850 at 6:45 tonight. Stay tuned later in the day for Westwood One's coverage of NCAA men's basketball right here on WEEI. Tonight is a huge rivalry game with the UNC Tar Heels squaring off with the Duke Blue Devils. Coverage begins at 6:15 p.m. I'm David Azar. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to John Lyons on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons. And I've spent most of the program talking football. We did start with Celtics. If you missed any of it, Odyssey app is free. Apple Podcasts, the website, wherever you find your WEEI content, you can hear it. So again, started Celtics, then talked a lot of football, some Chiefs-Patriots stuff, as well as some just Patriots offseason stuff. But now I want to turn our attention to the Boston Red Sox, because believe it or not, Truck Day is this week. Spring training is right around the corner. So we're going to talk a little Red Sox here with Cooper Boardman. He hosts pre and post game here on WEEI for the Red Sox quite often. You've probably heard his voice before. Cooper, welcome into the program. How are you?
Oh, I'm outstanding, Mr. John Lyons. Are you ready to talk some ball here?
I mean, I am.
It's happening.
I am. How was your offseason, Cooper?
Oh, it's outstanding. I am coming to you live right now from beautiful Orono, Maine. We got a little bit of college hockey next couple of days up here. So I think I'm in the place on earth that could not have less in common with Fort Myers if it tried.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it would have much in common with Fort Myers. And speaking of the squad that's going down to Fort Myers this week, So the offseason, it's not 100% over yet, Cooper, but we're pretty much wrapping up the offseason. I know there's some free agents still out there. We're going to get to that in a few moments. But just what are your general thoughts, impressions from the Red Sox offseason?
Yeah, the general consensus, I think, is one that is shared by just about every single Red Sox fan, which is, you know, we came into the offseason and you heard a message, you know, from above that it was going to be different. And there are some things that are different. You know, Garrett Crochet is the top of the list. There's no question the pitching is in a much better spot than it was, you know, 4, 5, 6 months ago. Offensively, I'm not sure this team is better. And there's going to be a lot of the prospects as we make our way into 2025. Those are the general bullet points. I think you have to believe this team is better than it was a season ago. I don't necessarily know if this is a team that is 7, 8, 9, 10 wins better than a season ago. But I do think the vibe, and again, I know there's, you know, this general apathy and general frustration. You know, Alex Bregman, I'm sure we'll talk about that. Everybody's mad about it. I get it. But I think that, you know, when truck day happens, when I'm sitting down there on February 20, whatever it is, you know, in spring training in Fort Myers, I think the vibe around the team will feel much better than it did at this time last year, and certainly much better than it did in August and September of last year.
Yeah, and Cooper, I agree with you. I do think the Red Sox are better than a year ago. I don't know if they're 10 wins better than a year ago, but the biggest reason I think they're better is what they've done with their pitching staff. The trade for Garrett Crochet, the signing of Walker Buehler. I mean, what to you, and it could be just those two moves, it could be other stuff, what do you view as the ceiling for this pitching staff? I mean, could this rotation, if Hauk is good like he was early last year, if Bayo has a good, could this be one of the better rotations in the league, or do you think they're still missing a piece there?
No, I have no pieces needed to be added at this juncture. And you know, I think, you know, we could talk about the offense, and again, I'm sure we will. We could talk about the bullpen, kind of where that's at. But you have a guy who is a legitimate, real Cy Young contender in Garrett Crochet. I think he has the third shortest odds to win the American League Cy Young. You've got Hauk, which we lived through that last year, and I have no reason to believe that he's going to take any significant stride backwards. And then you've got a lot of upside just kind of sitting out there between Bayo, Crawford, Buehler, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, we're not even talking about Richard Fitz and Quinn Priester, you know, and Lucas Giolito, who are in that mix. You know, the issue coming into the year, it was the issue of last year too, where if Hauk is your one and Crawford or Bayo is your two and or three, you're talking about a ceiling that is significantly lower for this team. But what the signing of Crochet does is it gives you somebody every 5 days that you know is going to be dominant. It gives you Hauk in the two spot, bump him back. Now all of a sudden you put that 1-2 up again. I don't care who it is in baseball. I would put that 1-2 up in any series and be perfectly fine with those two guys. It takes the heaps of pressure that we know. I mean, you watched Brian Bayo last year. You can't tell me that he didn't feel some of that pressure,
yeah,
whether it was put on himself or the Pedro comps or whatever, at the three spot. And now you can end up in a situation where you've got Buehler as a little bit more of a project. He has the ability to pop. I think he's going to be really good. And again, we're not even talking about the other guys. Criswell's still in there. So you have the stars at the top, and then you have depth. And you have a lot of things that not a lot of teams around baseball have in troves with what you have in terms of your depth.
So you mentioned Crochet, and I'm a big supporter of the Crochet trade. I do have high hopes for him. But we are talking about a guy one full year as a starter, 32 starts last year. He had 209 strikeouts, which was seventh in the league. Only 146 innings, though. Do you have any concerns about him trying to get to that 190, 200 inning mark? Do you think they're going to manage him in any way, or you think he's going to come in and he's going to be fine to hit those marks?
I think they'll manage him a little bit because you have to manage every starting pitcher in the year 2025. I mean, that's the reality of it. But, you know, this is somebody that when you hear from him, feels like he is the healthiest he's ever been because he was a starting pitcher, because of the consistency of routine. And look, you know, again, it's 2025. Like, you and I both know that, you know, the way that arm injuries are in baseball, anything can happen. But you're talking about a 26-year-old at the top of his craft right now, and you live with whatever result that is, and it's why you're going to sign him to an extension. I think the Red Sox will do that at some point here. They have to, especially for the capital that they gave up. But this was a no-brainer. We don't need to relitigate it on February 1st, but it was a no-brainer. And this is a dog. Like, this guy is as good as there is in the game of baseball. There are few people on earth you would rather have on the mound in any situation. And I think what's wonderful about it is he's not in Chicago anymore. He doesn't have to live, you know, in the season they had a year ago. But he also, remember, August and September, he could have pitched more. He could have threatened 180, 190, 200 innings. But they shut him down. Obviously, there was a lot in there, but he was not pitching to kind of the fullest extent and with the consistency of 5-6 innings night in, night out. I mean, he was a 3-inning guy for so much of the end of last season. I think that the reins will, generally speaking, be off. They'll take care of him early in the season. But this is your ace. They went out and got their ace. They had to do it, and they did it.
We're talking with Cooper Boardman, Red Sox pre- and post-game host here on WEEI. And Cooper, you mentioned it a couple times. Let's get to it. Alex Bregman. There's a lot to get to with Brett. I mean, is this a guy, A, that you want? And B, why do you think he's still sitting out there as a free agent?
Oh, man. He is the elephant in Fenway Park, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that sums it up, right? The sigh and that he's the elephant in Fenway Park. I think that kind of sums it up.
I can't open Twitter anymore. I don't know about you. I can't do it. It's so frustrating. So, there's a lot here, as you said. You know, this is a player that, you know, turned down 26 a year from the Houston Astros. I mean, you're talking about it. They gave him six at 156, which, oh, by the way, nobody else in the market, it seems like, is giving him. So you're talking about a $26 million a year player, which is a pretty high AAV. He wants more than that. Okay. Well, you're going to end up in a territory that is incredibly dangerous. I mean, you're in Xander Bogaerts territory, not the years. That's a bad contract in San Diego. You're in Matt Chapman territory in San Francisco. I'd argue that's a bad contract. You're in the Willy Adames territory. Essentially, he wants a contract that Willy Adames got, and he's not as good of a player as Willy Adames, and he's a year older, right? And we can go on and on about the different players around baseball that are kind of in his general spot. But the Red Sox, and I understand the logic, there are two sides to this. The Red Sox side of it is they don't want to sit here, you know, and deal with a 37-year-old at $27 million with the cavalry they have coming for younger players. He's going to block a spot for a Christian Campbell. But then the other side of it is all of that's true, but in 2025, does Alex Bregman fix some of your issues? All of your issues? Can make that argument. You know, defensive versatility, good defensive player, right-handed bat, power in that bat off a, you know, difficult year. If he had a flying colors year last year, it probably gets a lot easier. But, you know, again, you asked me off the bat, do I want him? And my answer is, at 6 years for $156 million, it's not a sexy answer. It's not the answer that anybody wants to mash into their keyboard on Twitter. I don't want him at six for 156.
And is that solely because of he would block spots for prospects, you think? Or is that you think he would diminish by age 35, 36, 37, yeah, and it wouldn't be, you know, worth it at that point?
The level of regression, right? Live the Nolan Arenado deal in St. Louis, right? You know, do I want Alex Bregman at 30 years old or 31 years old? Sure, I'm in. Do I want him at 32 years old? Sure, I'm in. And does he provide a cushion for Christian Campbell and Roman Anthony and so on and so forth to get to the big leagues? All of that is true. But at 34, I'm going to say all the ages because people need to hear it. 34, 35, 36, 37, if you want to beat the Astros offer because he rejected that offer, 38 years old. I mean, you know, that is the course that this front office is taking. They don't want the anvil around their ankle over those 4 or 5 years on the back end of the contract. And again, I'm not saying it's the pretty answer, but I think I understand the answer.
Yeah, and I think that there's also the argument to be made that the Red Sox are one of those handful of teams that can afford to do something like that and be okay. And I think that's where you mentioned the apathy, the frustration. I think some of it comes from there. I get your points, though. And you mentioned
So what I will say about that, right, and because that's an easy answer, and people say that, right? The Red Sox should be able to burn some money. And I agree. I totally understand that. But you're also talking about a player that got worse last year. You know, you're talking about, this is not Vlad, right? Like, everyone wants to talk about Vlad Guerrero at the end of next year, throw him a bag, you know, and have him be a Boston Red Sox. To me, that's a no-brainer, right? That's a guy who's in the highest pantheon of players in Major League Baseball, right? That's the guy that you go and pay. It's the reason why the Yankees overpaid for Aaron Judge. It's the reason why even the Padres overpaid for Manny Machado, and boy, did they, right? We can go on and on about all these different deals of a top 10 player in baseball. That's not what Alex Bregman was last year. This is not a no-brainer. This is a guy who had a good year, not a great year. And so he's asking for great year money from a season ago, and again, there's no one answer, right, about why not sign him. But I think when you add it all together, you can make a really compelling argument.
So you mentioned some of the prospects as well. You mentioned Christian Campbell, and ESPN had their new rankings this week. Three Red Sox guys in the top 26, Roman Anthony at number 2 overall. And really, I mean, if you think about it, I think they had Sasaki number 1. So it's, in a way, Anthony's kind of number 1 because Sasaki should start with the Dodgers right away. Do you think all three of those guys, Cooper, make it to the Red Sox after spring training? Do you think one of the three? I mean, and do you think Anthony's the immediate impact guy, or is it one of the other guys?
Well, all signs right now point to the idea that Christian Campbell is going to be given every opportunity to make the major league roster. And if you're not going to sign Alex Bregman, right, this is the other side of this conversation. If you're not going to go sign Alex Bregman, if you're not going to get one of the really, you know, meager number of right-handed bats still available on the market, you almost box yourself into the corner that Christian Campbell has to be on the opening day roster or has to be there early on in the season because he's going to fill second base and he's going to be a right-handed bat. Now, he's going to have to compete with Vaughn Grissom. He's going to have to compete with Romy Gonzalez and David Hamilton for that spot. But I think they're going to give him every chance. And by the way, I'll just say this, being a Worcester, you know, the last few years and watching him last year, like this dude's wrecked. Like, this is a guy that on paper is a major leaguer. I think they're going to be very aggressive with him. Roman Anthony, I think with all of the left-handed bats with what he has and his age, I would be a little at this point. And again, like, they haven't been in Fort Myers yet, right? Spring training hasn't started yet. I'd be a little surprised if Roman Anthony is on the opening day roster, and Myers' timeline's well behind that because of the injury. I mean, you know, Marcelo Myers never played a second of AAA baseball. He's promoted to AAA but got hurt. But Campbell is the guy as the right-handed bat in a lineup that still continues to have way too many lefties in it on a night-to-night basis. Campbell's the guy that to me is – It almost feels obvious that he's going to get the chance to make the major league roster.
So, Cooper, as we head into spring training here, and just a couple more questions for you. The Red Sox, their pitching staff's better. Their lineup might be slightly worse, but it depends on Christian Campbell and maybe some of these other guys. Obviously, you lose Tyler O'Neill. The Yankees lose Juan Soto, but they gain Max Fried and Bellinger and Devin Williams. The Orioles lose Corbin Burns. Where are the Red Sox at in this AL East picture?
Oh, million-dollar question. You know, this is the week, right? I feel like I've talked to a million people, you know, around the organization and around baseball because the rosters are really starting to take shape. We kind of know what the Blue Jays are going to be. They've solidified their bullpen. They've made a couple of moves in their lineup. You know, the Orioles have made some moves around the edges. The Rays, just upgraded, on the infield, and the Yankees have done a lot in terms of signing a lot of very old players to very short-term deals. I do think that the Yankees, based on what they did, are probably, and, you know, Vegas would back you up on this, at the top of the division right now. The Orioles are right there with them. And then it's a race for third. And by the way, a race for third in a division of this quality is very much a wild card race, right? And I think the Red Sox are right there with Toronto, who got better. I don't, you know, but again, that was such a dumpster fire and such a travesty of a season last year that I don't They need to prove to me that they're capable of doing it, especially in Vladdy's walk year. And the Rays, you know, is kind of a who knows situation, but I do think that they're better. So anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying that the Red Sox right now, with the lineup the way it is, are probably the third best team in the division and very much in the wild card conversation. But we'll see. We'll see.
Cooper, last question for you. Are you a truck day guy? Are you looking forward to truck day this week or no? Just get yourself to Fort Myers.
I'm reading the press release about it. I was looking forward to it, but it's at 7 a.m. on Monday. I mean, I just can't do it. I can't do it. It's supposed to rain on Monday, too.
Yeah, I think, you know what, just you're better off sleeping in. Yeah, forget it. Yeah.
I'll watch the video is evergreen. I could watch that at, like, you know, 11 o'clock.
That's true. You can roll out of bed and just watch the video. And, you know, the truck's driving down I-95 anyway. Like, we get it. So
Yeah, we can catch it somewhere.
Yeah, he is Cooper Boardman, pre- and post-game host for the Red Sox here on WEEI. Cooper, really appreciate you taking the time and sharing your insights on the Red Sox.
Lads, appreciate you always. Great show.
Awesome. That is Cooper Boardman again, pre- and post-game host for the Boston Red Sox. Had some interesting things to say. If you missed any of it, Odyssey app is free. I'm surprised he's not a Bregman guy. David Ayers, are you a Alex Bregman guy?
Yeah, I just think he fills a lot of holes that you are severely lacking right now. But when he did talk about the long-term deal and the Red Sox being hesitant in that aspect, I do understand it.
Yeah, and I'm surprised Bregman turned down 6 years from the Astros, to a team he's won two World Series with, six-year offer, $26 million a year. I was surprised he turned that down. I don't know if he's going to get anything better than that. I mean, I feel like if he had gotten something better than that, he wouldn't be a free agent still. So I don't know if he's just hoping the Red Sox or the Tigers or someone are going to up their offer. Because remember, it was spring training, I think, 2018 when J.D. Martinez. Right. So it's not unprecedented for a really good hitter to sign like that into spring training. I don't think he's going to get a better offer than that. Yeah, maybe he's just hoping Detroit or Boston will match it. But if that's all you're hoping, why not just stay in Houston? I don't know. I don't get it. But I would want Bregman. And I also think you can get a little creative in his last few years, where if you want Christian Campbell at second base and you have Casas and you have Meyer and you have Roman Anthony, you can have Devers be your DH and Casas plays first and Bregman plays third. Or you can have Casas DH and Bregman learn to play first. We've seen it before. We saw Kevin Youkilis do it. I know that's only one example, but I think you can get creative with that. So I would still want to make the move. And also, like Cooper said right now, and I think it's a fair point that you're probably the third best team in the AL East right now. You sign Alex Bregman, I think you're the second best team in the AL East, maybe pushing to be the best team. Because you look at the Yankees, Max Fried, Devin Williams, their pitching staff, especially with, you know, Garrett Cole there, maybe an edge on yours, but it's really close now, especially that you have Crochet. They lose Soto, they add Bellinger. If you add Bregman to replace what, you know, Tyler O'Neill, and I know the numbers, especially against lefties, aren't exactly the same, but maybe your lineup's at least now in their neighborhood. And I would take your manager, Alex Cora, over Aaron Boone. So, I mean, you add Bregman, you're the second best team in the AL East, you're a playoff team, and you're pushing to be the best team in the AL East. So again, thank you to Cooper Boardman for joining us. We're going to switch back to football coming up next, because today is a special anniversary if you're a Patriots fan. If you know, you know. And if you don't know, I'm going to tell you about it after this break. I want to take your texts and calls, though. Anything Celtics, Patriots, Red Sox, Bruins you want to add? Bruins are up 4-1 entering the third period now of their game. But anything you want, call or text. I'll be here at about 6:15. So stick with us here on WEEI.
We're back to John Lyons on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons. Big thank you again to Cooper Boardman for joining us to talk Red Sox last segment. If you missed any of it, Odyssey app is free, or Apple Podcasts, or the website, wherever you get your audio. I play that cut because today is a special day in the history of the Patriots. If you're a Patriots fan, you already know. 21 years ago today, February 1st, 2004, the Patriots won Super Bowl 38, 32-29 over the Carolina Panthers. For my money, the most underrated Super Bowl there was. I mean, that was a game. Patriots were up 21-10 in the fourth quarter. Then they got down. Brady threw an interception right near the end zone. Then they end up tying, they get up again. Panthers tie the game. Brady goes down, obviously helped out by a kick out of bounds. Vinatieri hits the almost walk-off field goal. Patriots win 32-29 for their second Super Bowl championship in 3 years. So that was special part one. But special part two, in what is my, in my opinion, Brady's greatest performance and also the greatest game in NFL history. 10 years ago today, Super Bowl 49, Patriots beat the Chiefs 28-24 and win their fourth Super Bowl. First one in 10 years, too. Remember, if you're a Patriots fan, you might remember 06, they lose the AFC Championship game. 07, they lose the Super Bowl. 08, Brady misses the year. Hurt. 09, they got blown out in the wild card round. 2010, they have that really bad divisional round loss to the Jets. 2011, Super Bowl loss. 2012 and 13, AFC Championship game losses. There was kind of a feeling that, man, they might never win another one, right? They're good, but they might never win another one. I believe Brady had a quote after Super Bowl 46 loss to the Giants about, like, if we get back to the Super Bowl. I mean, he was using the word if. So there had been this drought. And, of course, you had all that Deflategate nonsense. That was so, that was the most annoying time in sports, was like Deflategate for me. It was so stupid. But you had all that going on. And meanwhile, the Patriots start out that year 2-2. After, and remember that embarrassing Monday Night Football game loss to the Chiefs? Was it 42-14, I think it was? 41-14. It was 42 or 41-14. Blown out. And then they go on an absolute heater. Finish the year 12-4. Their only other losses were a 26-21 loss to Green Bay and then a loss to the Bills the last week of the season where Garoppolo played most of the game and Patriots weren't really trying. So they go 12-4. They come back from 14 down twice to the Ravens to advance in divisional round, blow out the Colts, Deflategate starts, and what do they get in the Super Bowl? But the Legion of Boom Seattle Seahawks, defending Super Bowl champs, for my money. And David, I don't know how you feel about this, our producer David Azar. I think that Seattle team was the best team the Patriots ever played against. Of all, and they beat the greatest show on turf in 01. They beat a really good Eagles team in 04. They beat the Peyton Manning Colts in 03, 04. Obviously, there were those Giants teams that beat them. They played the Rams with Aaron Donald in 2018. Like, they played a lot of great teams. Those Ravens teams were great. The Steelers teams were really good. But I think that Seattle team, defending Super Bowl champs, we're talking about at least two Hall of Famers in their secondary in Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, another elite player in Cam Chancellor. You had Michael Bennett, who could be a Hall of Famer, could not, he's close. Bobby Wagner, probably going to be a Hall of Famer at linebacker. On offense, you had a good offensive line. You had Russell Wilson, who at the time was a really good quarterback. Marshawn Lynch is a Hall of Famer at running back. Pete Carroll's a Hall of Fame coach. So that, to me, was the best team they played against. And Brady throws an interception on the first series in the end zone, of course. Patriots get up 14-7, have a really bad last series of the first half. Seahawks tie it up 14-14, and then they get down in the second half. They give up the field goal on the Seahawks' early possession there. I think it was their first possession in the second half. Then Brady throws an interception. Seahawks score a touchdown to Doug Baldwin. It's 24-14, and it's, man, at that time, no team had ever come down from 10 points in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. And what do the Patriots do? What does Brady do? 13 of 15, 124 yards and two touchdowns in the fourth quarter to take the lead 28-24. I mean, it's just, to me, and don't forget, they had that 3rd-and-14 conversion on their first touchdown drive of the fourth quarter. I mean, nobody was converting 3rd-and-14 against the Seahawks. Then they go down the field. They get the Amendola touchdown. Then they have the other big, and then on their final scoring drive, they have that big conversion after a penalty, by the way. They have that big conversion across the middle to Gronkowski. They end up throwing the touchdown pass to Edelman. And Seattle, to their credit, responds. They hit that big wheel route to Marshawn Lynch over Jamie Collins down the sideline. Have that crazy Jermaine Kearse catch. And then, of course, we know what happened. Hightower bench presses Russell Okung off him. Tackles Marshawn Lynch at the one. They hit the, and then the Malcolm Butler play, which, by the way, if you, and I know Matt Patricia's got quite a bit of criticism here for his last few years in New England. Check out his appearance on the Games with Name podcast with Julian Edelman this week. Phenomenal breakdown of how them stopping the Seahawks on a 3rd-and-1 early in the third quarter, he thought affected how they might call plays later in short yardage situations. They waited to put their personnel out there to try to bait the Seahawks into throwing the goal line 3-corner personnel. I mean, to me, just the back and forth of that whole thing, going back to the Patriots' offensive game plan to stay away from Richard Sherman, the Seahawks somehow finding Chris Matthews and utilizing him. Then, of course, the Seahawks, a defending Super Bowl champ, generational defense, taking a 10-point lead, Patriots punching back, taking a lead of their own, Seahawks going down, almost going to win it. And then to me, that Malcolm Butler play, the single biggest play in the history of the NFL. Because if he doesn't make that play and Seattle wins, they're the new dynasty. They've won back-to-back Super Bowls. Who knows? Maybe they win another one, you know, in subsequent years. Patriots, it would be yet another one they don't win. That was, don't forget, Darrelle Revis's only year on the Patriots. The next year, they had a bunch of injuries. They ended up winning in 16, I know, but who knows how things would have gone. Maybe would have accelerated the timetable with Garoppolo. I have no idea. But it wouldn't have been good. So that specific play, the Malcolm Butler interception, changed the fortunes of not just the Seahawks and the Patriots, but maybe the Denver Broncos. Maybe the Patriots load up differently and they beat the Broncos the next year and Denver doesn't win that Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. Maybe it also affected a team like the Steelers, who made the AFC Championship game a few years later. I mean, there's a lot of teams affected by that. So I think it's the single biggest play in not just Super Bowl history, but in sports history. And I give the Patriots a ton of credit for that. And to me, that really was, I call it the best game ever, because I think, A, the Seahawks were the best team the Patriots ever played against. But also, that Patriots team, I think the 04 Patriots are the best team they had. I actually think the 2014 Patriots is the second best, maybe even better than 07. And 07 was great, 18-0, right? 16-0 in the regular season, Moss, Welker. But we're talking about a team with Brady. You could make the case in 14, his raw numbers weren't as good as 07, but as a pure quarterback, especially after that Monday night loss to KC, some of the best football he ever played, Gronkowski, that offensive line was elite. I think your 14 defense, I know the numbers don't always match up. I think that was a better defense than 07. Revis, Browner, McCourty, Chung, that secondary, no disrespect to Asante Samuel, Rodney Harrison, who should be in the Hall of Fame, on that 07 defense, but your 14 secondary was better. Your linebackers with Hightower and Collins. Again, I know you had Bruschi and Seau, but they were a little bit older in 07. I might take Hightower, just those year-to-year comparison, I might take Hightower and Collins. In defensive line, I think it's pretty close. Your defensive line in 07, I'd probably give a slight edge to them. But, I mean, I think that 14 team has a real argument for the second-best team they ever had. So, and then to go up against that Seahawks team, that's why I said I think that was just maybe the best Super Bowl matchup ever. And then the way it played out, that both teams played at such a high level, both making moves, like chess-type moves. I just, like that Jeremy Lane interception on the first drive. He breaks his arm, too, which is an underrated storyline the rest of the game. But, I mean, how many times does Tom Brady really get fooled? And they had him fooled on that end zone interception. So, that's right. Again, to me, that game was the best game ever, because of the matchup, but also how it played out. So I just wanted to highlight that. It's the anniversary of it today. Of course, it's also the anniversary of Super Bowl 38. Got the final segment of the show coming up next. I've been talking a lot of Super Bowl stuff, whether it was earlier with comparing the Chiefs to the Patriots dynasty, just now reliving some of the Patriots' glory. I'm going to give you a little early preview of Super Bowl 59, which is coming up next Sunday. It'll be broadcast here on WEEI. Chiefs versus Eagles. I'm going to talk a little bit about that, wrap up the show as well in our final segment coming up next.
This is John Lyons on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI. Final segment of the show. I'm John Lyons. And we're going to get to your calls, get to your texts. I'm going to talk a little bit early look ahead to the Super Bowl next week, because there's some, I think there's some hope if you're a Patriots fan who doesn't want the Chiefs to win. I do think there is some hope. Let's start. We got producer David Azer here. David, what do you got on the text line for us?
Yeah, first one is, don't forget, a better offensive line coach might get them to play much better, but still draft one.
Yeah, I agree. Look, their coaching last year offensive, and this isn't just a bash Scott Peters thing. I think Scott Peters is a good coach who had very little to work with. If it's Doug Marrone this year, he's been hired. Indications are he'll be the offensive line coach. Is he better than Scott Peters? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I think it's kind of close. I'd give him a slight edge. He's at least more experienced. And I'd obviously give Josh McDaniels a big edge over Alex Van Pelt. But you still need to add talent there. Like, as excited as I am over Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels and Terrell Williams and all the coaches, none of those guys play left tackle. Yeah, none of those guys play receiver. None of them play edge either. So, yeah, I agree. I think you might get more out of the offensive line just from different coaching this year and better coordinating. But you still need to invest in it. What else you got for us, David?
Vrabel is about the battle of the trenches. He's going offensive line or defensive line.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's a smart thing, especially when you look at the Patriots' needs. Offensive tackle is their biggest need. I'd probably put receiver at two. Not far behind, though. They need some extra help at defensive tackle. I mean, let's not forget, they let Lawrence Guy go last year. Christian Barmore missed time with injury. They got run on a lot. And if Barmore is healthy and you have him and Godshaw, and I do think Keon White will be better with the new coaching staff, but it still feels like, and Anthony Jennings, I think I like as a player, and I think he'll grow and be better with this coaching staff. It still feels like you're a defensive tackle short. So that's not a round one thing, probably not even a round two thing. That could be a round three or four thing. So I agree. I think Vrabel is a big build through the trenches guy. You saw that in Tennessee. You saw that even teams he played on here in New England, right? Had great players, you know, at quarterback, at skill positions, but they were always good in the trenches. So, David, what else?
Why not Bregman later on be DH?
See, he gets it. That texter from the 978, and I say he or she, that texter from the 978, yeah, I'm okay with Bregman or Devers being your long-term DH if you sign Bregman. I think, to me, and I understand, like, they have so many middle infield prospects, the Red Sox do. I get it. But, I mean, you can have Bregman there, and you can have Marcelo Meyer, and you can have Costas, and you can have Devers, and then if Christian Campbell pushes, one of those guys could be a DH, whether it's Costas, whether it's Devers, whether it's Bregman, whether you trade even one of those guys, probably Costas would be the most likely for another elite starting pitcher or something. Like, same thing with your outfield. Your long-term outfield is Roman Anthony, Jaron Duran, Willy Abreu. That's pretty darn good, and I'm for it. So, yeah, I think, again, you don't want to have a gluttony of guys there, but you have room to sign a Bregman and move some things around. David, what else we got?
Yeah, I think this is the last one. Wait, what about the Atlanta Super Bowl? That was the greatest, in my opinion.
Yeah, that is a contender for me. So, look, my favorite Patriots team and my favorite Super Bowl was probably the 0-1 team in Super Bowl 36 because it was the first one they won. That's probably my favorite team and my favorite championship. I think Super Bowl 49 was the best game. And I think if you just compare it, I think the 2014 Patriots are a better team than 2016, even though 2016 went 14-2. Some of their numbers are better. They also played a softer schedule. If you go back, I mean, they were playing the Jeff Fisher Rams. I mean, they were playing teams that weren't that good. And I'm not trying to take anything away from them. But I think you look at the two teams, I think the 14 Patriots were a little bit better than the 16 Patriots. I also think the 14 Seahawks were better than that Falcons team. And I know Matt Ryan won the MVP. I know Julio Jones is a Hall of Famer. I just think that Seahawks defense is a lot better than that Falcons defense. And I think there's one other text there from the 978. Pat's defense was actually good against that high-power offense. Yeah, that goes true for Super Bowl 49. Patriots defense only gave up 24 points, which in a Super Bowl, you could sometimes see them be higher scoring because they just go so long. So Pat's defense, 24 points, 7 of it were on a short field after an interception. I mean, and they made the key stops when they needed to. So, yeah, I mean, I thought that outside of that one drive at the end of the first half where Russell Wilson had the big run, then Chris Matthews caught a touchdown virtually at the buzzer of the first half. I thought that was a bad series from the Patriots in Super Bowl 49. Rest of the game, I thought they were really, really good throughout. So, David, got a few minutes left here. Super Bowl 59 next week. Are you, and we talked about this a little bit at the beginning of the show, are you just anti-Chiefs, anti-Chiefs? Do you want a good game? Like, or you think the Eagles can actually win this, or is just the Mahomes Chiefs thing inevitable?
I was thinking about this a bit earlier. I think the Eagles are a pretty good matchup for the Chiefs. We saw last week or 2 weeks ago now in the AFC Championship, the Bills ran the ball a lot, and James Cook had a lot of success on the ground. And the Eagles have, I think, the best running back in the league, Saquon Barkley. That's pretty hard to dispute at this point. I think the Eagles will give them a run for their money, but ultimately I'm leaning Chiefs. I think it will be a good game, though.
Yeah, I actually think the Eagles are going to win this game. And I'm going to talk about this more with KJ Carson tomorrow. I'll be on with him from 2 to 6. But I think the Eagles are going to win. And I think if you're a Patriots fan and you don't want the Chiefs to three-peat and win a fourth Super Bowl, it's the line of scrimmage. And I know it's all about Mahomes and Hurts and Saquon Barkley. The Philadelphia Eagles defensive line might be the only one in the NFL that can match up equally to the interior of the Chiefs offensive line with Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. And I actually think the Chiefs, because of that, because of guys like Jalen Carter in the middle, they might be forced to play Joe Tooney back at left guard, because I think that's still there. And I know Joe Tooney's been fantastic at left tackle ever since he took over. But I think that Eagles' interior of their defensive line, the defensive line as a whole, is so good, they might be forced to put Tooney back on the inside. And even then, I think it's an even matchup. Like, and not many teams can say when they go against the Chiefs that their defensive line is an even matchup for the Chiefs' offensive line. I think that matters. I mean, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, Nolan Smith has really come on the second half of this year, I feel like. Zach Bond, obviously, at linebacker, he's a missile going everywhere. So I just think, again, this Eagles defensive line can actually match up with the Chiefs interior. And then on the other side of it, look, Chris Jones, George Karlaftis, great combination. Chris Jones, probably him and Jalen Carter might be the two best defensive tackles in the NFL. You know, he's at the worst, he's top five. I think this Eagles offensive line, though, has an edge over that Chiefs defensive line. And we saw the handful of times the Chiefs have actually lost in the postseason. 2018, the Patriots outscored them, but they gave the Chiefs a lot of problems up front, especially in the first half of that AFC Championship game. 2020, the Chiefs offensive line got dominated by the Bucs defensive line. Remember, Mahomes was running everywhere for his life. And then in 2021, the Chiefs blew a lead. That was probably more about Joe Burrow. So two out of the three times the Chiefs have lost here in the postseason, since, you know, this Mahomes run began, they've been out-physicaled at the line of scrimmage. And I think, again, most teams in the NFL could not do that. I think the Eagles might be the one team where on both sides of the ball on the line of scrimmage, I'd give them an edge over the Chiefs. And again, love the Chiefs' interior offensive line with Humphrey, with Smith, and I hope Trey Smith is a Patriot next year. And Joe Tooney playing great at left tackle. They might move him back to left guard for this game. But I still give the Eagles an edge because of what they can bring across. Whether it's not just Jalen Carter, who already looks like he's on a Hall of Fame track, but it's Jordan Davis, it's Nolan Smith. Like, it's, and when they bring pressure with Zach Bond, right? Like, it's like, or Jeremiah Trotter Jr. Like, it's those guys. And then, in the Eagles' offensive line, I still think Detroit has the best offensive line, but the Eagles, Mailata has been really good at left tackle. Like, and we'll see Juergens and Dickerson, if those guys are fully healthy. They do have 2 weeks off before the Super Bowl. But then your right side, you have Mekhi Becton and Lane Johnson. I mean, it felt like Jalen Hurts' first touchdown run in the divisional round, it wasn't touched going through the right side of the offensive line. So that's why, to me, if you're a Patriots fan and you don't want the Chiefs to three-peat, you don't want them to win their fourth Super Bowl and keep getting closer to the Patriots, I think you got to look at the line of scrimmage, and I think the Eagles have an edge. And I know the Chiefs have been amazing in these one-score games. It feels like they always make the right play, and it's credit to them. They make so many smart plays, but I think the Eagles have just enough of an edge that they can win this game. David, what do you think? You think, did I convince you? Can the Eagles win this game because of the line of scrimmage?
I like that. I like that take. I think, like I mentioned with the running back, Saquon Barkley, the offensive line will be key there. And I think it's just about containing Patrick Mahomes, because a lot of times he'll just take off in broken plays and defenses are seemingly never expecting it. So I think the battle of the lines will be very key. And that's a good point. I think I'm going to lean Eagles. Yeah.
Yeah. And look, you know what's going to happen. It's going to be a tie game with a minute and a half to go, and Mahomes and Kelsey are going to make some magical play, and the Chiefs are going to win, and I'm going to sit there and punch myself in the face for stupidly picking against them again. You know, I got to stop picking against Chiefs. I picked against them last week. I should have known better. I picked against them last year in the Super Bowl. I thought the 49ers would win. I should have known better. But, hey, I think the Eagles have a slight edge here. Big thank you, David Azer. Great job producing the show today. That Mahomes-Brady montage you heard earlier, that was all his doing. If you missed any of the show, Odyssey app is free. Go back and listen. Website as well, Apple Podcasts. Thanks again, Cooper Boardman, for joining us to talk Red Sox. We also talked some Celtics early on. Thank you to all our callers and texters. Coverage of UNC versus Duke basketball is coming up next here on WEEI.